Hello and welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast. I'm Michelle Grattan. Tony Windsor today has confirmed that he'll run against Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce in the New South Wales seat of New England. Windsor was one of the crucial backbenchers who entered agreements with Julia Gillard, allowing her to form a minority government in 2010. His balance of power position enabled him to bring home the gold for his seat, which he'd first won as an independent in 2001. Windsor has a long-time beef with the Nationals, after a big falling out early in his career when he was dumped as a Nationals candidate. He defeated a first-term Nationals MP to take New England, so this battle is the continuation of a very long war. The New England fight will make for two nail-biting contests in the election involving high-profile independents. In Indi, independent MP Cathy McGowan is up against former Liberal MP Sophie Mirabella, who's trying to make a comeback. Tony Windsor joins us today. Welcome to the Conversations podcast. Could you start by telling us why you were standing at your news conference? You had a mix of local and national factors.
Well, I don't think I've ever seen in my political lifetime, anyway, a situation where there's so many big issues within the electorate of New England and other regional and city electorates that are at the national level as well. And I talk about the National Broadband Network. Armidale in the electorate has got fibre to the premise. Tamworth was getting that, and that's all stopped. So it's an issue, I think, that's very much linked to the future. Climate change, water resources, agricultural drought policy, all of those things are about the future, and I don't think the current members addressing those, particularly the interface of water on the Liverpool Plains and the extractive industries. The Gonski needs-based funding, I was involved in that in the Hung Parliament, in the funding arrangements, and absolutely critical to kids that are getting a bit behind. So, if we're serious about our future, I think we've got to really start to address some of these issues that deliver the future rather than just talk about them.
It sounds a very personal fight between you and Barnaby Joyce. You called him Deputy Dog, and you say he's part of what you've dubbed previously the Abbott Crazies. Is this going to be a very nasty battle that might dismay some of the locals?
Oh, well, I'll leave that for others to determine. It'll be about policies in my mind. When you've got a local member that's been a blockage to some of those policy initiatives, and the people that live in that area are going to be the victims of some of the outcomes if there's not a policy shift in some of these things, I think it's got to be called for what it is. And I see the current Prime Minister seems to be hamstrung by a small group of people on the right of politics that are hindering from moving on some of these issues.
Of whom Barnaby Joyce is one, you'll say?
Yes, I think he is. Erica Betts, I think everybody knows who they are. And particularly in the climate change space and water management, etc. Barnaby Joyce, was there when they axed the current Prime Minister over that very issue. So he sees climate change as a political victory and not something that he can actually revisit because of his past involvement in it. So that's all very well for him in the short-term politics. But the point I'm making is that in terms of the long-term outcomes in the region he represents, the victims live there. If climate change is right, if we do go ahead with some of these mega mines on the biggest groundwater resource in the Murray-Darling and things start to go wrong, the people in the electorate are the ones that suffer. The Tony Windsors and Barnaby Joyces will be gone as political representatives. So there's a real crossroads here, and that's the reason I'm standing. Real crossroads here to address these issues, because some of them we don't have a lot of time. If we take the wrong turn, we are the victims long term. If we take the right turn, we can be part of the future.
Now, you seem to quite like Malcolm Turnbull, indeed quite admire Malcolm Turnbull. Is that right?
Yeah, I've always got on well with Malcolm. I think, like a lot of people, a little bit disappointed in the last few months, but time will tell. I think he's he's a man who's prepared to embrace the future and try and put a policy mix together that will actually participate in that debate. My problem with him, in a sense, on a policy issue, is very much about the national broadband network. And I've said publicly that perhaps being the minister when Tony Abbott was the prime minister has put him in a position where he really had to destroy the NBN because, you know, Prime Minister Gillard had something to do with it. So I think a lot of Tony Abbott's agenda was to rid the nation of some of the legacy of those of the previous government. Well, I don't think that the short-term politics again is good enough. We need NBN and we need the appropriate do it once, do it right, you know, do it with fibre.
What do you think on the question of climate change Malcolm Turnbull should now be doing?
Well, I think we've got to really start to engage with the rest of the world. The words are being presented. Greg Hunt's presenting some of the words, and he occasionally goes to the extent of calling it some sort of pricing mechanism. So there's almost this embarrassment within the government, and in my view, it's definitely coming from this group, Abbott and Joyce and co, that are sort of see it as a political issue. It was all about carbon tax, and you know, they want to get back into that game. But I think Malcolm Turnbull's got to, you know, show a bit of leadership on this. The world is moving. We should be part of that future, not just for our own people, particularly in the country. If our people in the country suffer from this, they become the victims. People in the cities will probably just buy another air conditioner or put stilts under their house. You know, they can overcome the problem, but those who live on the land and derive their income from the land, it's a real issue.
You were in a very special position, of course, last time as a balance of power member to get special things for your electorate. Now, Barnaby Joyce will argue, that in the current situation it is better to have a senior member of the government as the local member who has access to being able to pressure for benefits for the electorate, rather than an independent who won't be in the balance of power again. At least the odds are extraordinarily long against that.
Well, I think if anybody looked in my history, both at state and federal level, they'd see that things happen within the electorate, irrespective of who's in government.
Well, you've been in balance of power in both parliaments, maybe the odds shorten on it happening with you.
But I've also been in situations, and in fact, I often reflect that I think one of my most successful parliaments as a parliamentarian was in the New South Wales Parliament, where there was a 16-seat majority. Now, the reason for that, and I had some input into, you know, water policy and a number of other policy areas, and the electorate didn't suffer. But the reason at the electorate level is that what an independent brings to the stage is political competition, and the competitive nature of politics takes place. What's happened, and you can see it in New England since Barnaby Joyce has arrived, things have stopped. Tamworth is not getting the NBN. It was supposed to. It's not getting it. There's very little being done on the Liverpool Plains in a policy sense or a practical sense as a minister, a local member, a man at the table. Very little occurring. In fact, nothing happening in that space. The Flying College defence contract is gone. That should never have happened. People say, oh, it's not about politics, it's about process. Well, look at what's happening with the submarines in South Australia. It's about politics, always has been.
So do you think the very fact that you're nominating or going to nominate will put more pressure, competitive pressure into the system, and the benefits could start to flow irrespective of whether you win or lose?
Oh, I've got no doubt that it'll happen. It started 2 days ago. It's a live... A live thing, because Mr. Joyce, things have left the electorate and very few things have come. And in fact, when he says that he's out there working hard, there are things that were funded by Penny Wong and, you know, the Chaffee Dam, for instance. He claims that as an initiative. It was all funded before he came along. And there's a myriad of those things. Very little has occurred in the electorate of substantive progress. But more worrying to me is the policy blockage that's having an impact.
Now, how do you rate your chances of winning?
Oh, it's winnable. There's no doubt about that. All seats are. But any seats where the incumbent is under 50% are up, you know, they're on the table. Now, I'm not naive in politics. I know there'll be an enormous amount of money thrown at this. But my campaign will be based on people. And people power, if it gets positioned correctly, can actually do a tremendous amount.
Now, what about money, though? You will need some. How much will you need, and where are you going to get it?
Well, we'll be initiating various, well, I guess in a sense, a funding program. Anybody out there that can make a donation, there'll be
You'll need
portals.
More than tea and scones after that,
yeah,
though,
no,
won't
no,
you?
No. And there's a challenge in this as well. If people, irrespective of whether they're in the electorate or not, if they actually believe that some of the things I'm talking about are important, well, I'm going to need a hand. If they don't believe they're important, well, you know, don't worry too much about it. But,
get on the buses and come in, you're saying.
Yeah. Be involved, make it happen. Because it's not just about one guy and another in terms of politics, in my mind. It is about some of these more futuristic issues. And
pretty interesting two guys, though, for the contest.
Oh, well.
Now, when did you seriously start considering a political comeback?
Well, I've never lost interest in the place or the policies. I thought I probably would once I got away from it, but that hasn't happened. Probably about a year ago I started to think about it, and I started to flag quite publicly some of these concerns that I had, and I think, well, yeah, maybe they might address them. And then when Turnbull came in, I thought, well, maybe they might address some of those things. He's been more about the future than the past. That hasn't happened. So, you know, I made a decision with my wife when we went to Tasmania only a week or so ago that I would. And she said to me, she said, what if you lose? Would you be worried if you lost? I said, I think I'd be more concerned if I didn't stand. I think these issues are important. And what David Morrison said was ringing in my ears too. The standard you walk past is the standard you accept. And I'm just, these issues that are sitting there, critical ones, I'm not prepared to walk past and say, oh, I'll let someone else put up with it.
Some people will say, well, he's had his go, he did walk away.
Hmm. Well, they're quite entitled to say that. That's correct in the sense that I did retire. I wanted to do some things with my family. I had two kids getting married around that election period. I had a sick daughter that still has some issues, but she's getting better. I had a mother that was in the last year or so of her life. I had a wife that I'd never really taken overseas. I wanted to do those things. I had a son, younger bloke, only 21 at the time, that I took to Africa. And got back into farming, and I love that. But I'll remain in that mode, in a sense, but I've constantly seen these issues that are sitting there that are involved in some of the economic and the environmental issues of farming, the region, the Murray-Darling, where we're starting to slip backwards, and I think we've got to recognise they've got to go forwards. Not the short-term stuff. I'm more interested in long-term stuff.
Now, some people locally were angry with you for going with the Gillard government, and obviously some of the unpopularity of that government rubbed off on you. Do you think that that feeling has softened, dissipated locally?
Well, I think a lot of that feeling was generated from people who weren't in the electorate in the first place. You know, city-based media that thought that there's an enormous backlash against this guy up there. You know, I was the local member through that period of time. I went to functions and the people were always very courteous, etc. Did all the local member work, had meetings, etc. I had 14 people during that hung parliament, and I understand people. I didn't ask for the hung parliament. It was delivered upon us. And I'm proud of that time, absolutely proud of it, because I think we were able to work in a policy sense with Prime Minister Gillard, look at a lot of the issues. They had all their internal stupidity going on in the Labor Party around it. But I think we were above that, and we were able to get some pretty good outcomes in terms of policy. And some of those are still there now, and I'm still interested in them. So people say, oh, you're associated with Gillard. Well, have a look at Abbott. Have a look at Abbott. You know, the thing that I hear in the street more than anything else is that, well, I didn't like what you did, but I can understand why you did it now.
And you were going to speak about 14 people?
Oh, well, I've had 14 people in the electorate over those 3 years have a go at me.
Only?
Yeah. I used to count them. A normal period, I would have had at least that.
Now, you have, however, said that in the extremely unlikely circumstances that you were in a balance of power situation again, you'd hang loose, not enter a formal alliance. Do you have regrets in retrospect that you entered that alliance? Do you think you could have...
No, I don't. I don't. I think given the circumstances and the absolute negativity of the opposition leader at that time, Tony Abbott, and the lack of understanding, I think, within the broader electorate as how our parliamentary processes work, I think one of the things we're trying to do was to send a signal that a functioning parliament can work. And out of that, I think people have got a better idea of how the system does work. But essentially, last time, if we'd supported no one, a government would have been formed, and that government would have stayed there until there was a no-confidence vote in its activities. So there could have been no formal arrangement, and actually the formal arrangement's not worth the paper it's written on either. No, it's not a legal document. So you could have had a situation where the parliament was formed, the prime minister assumed the chair, and until the prime minister of the day did something stupid or ridiculous or inflamed the crossbench, nothing would happen. And I think that was borne out because Tony Abbott, even though he rolled on about no confidence in this government and all the vitriol that poured out of him, there was no time that he actually introduced a no-confidence motion. When Kevin Rudd came in at the end, right at the end of the parliament, I said to Tony Abbott, I said, introduce a no-confidence motion because I'm not supporting Kevin Rudd. Introduce it. He didn't want to do it.
Nevertheless, you said you wouldn't go down that path again. You would hang loose.
Oh, I'd have to, you know, really look at all the implications of that. But I think that would probably be the way that I'd go. I think that's worth exploring. But I don't think there will be a hung parliament.
Now, one local issue is the proposed Shenhua mine coal development that's now just outside the electorate. It was in the electorate, but the redistribution has put it outside. You're against it on the grounds that it's a threat to the underground water system. Barnaby Joyce has also spoken out against it. He's talked about the aquifers as well. And that's despite being a cabinet minister where he's under certain discipline. It does seem a case of shared opposition and mutual impotence.
Yeah, well, I'd say it's sham opposition from one of us, the minister. There's been a number of things, and it's a very complex issue, this, particularly how water works. I was involved with the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. I was involved with the New South Wales Water Act. I've been involved in achieving sustainability of groundwater systems in the past as a farmer and a parliamentarian. But they're very complicated issues. But Barnaby Joyce, by his actions, has been complicit in the neglect of some of the processes, independent scientific processes that could have been put in place, the bioregional assessment process, the risk assessment process that actually models the cumulative impacts of one mine, two mines, coal seam gas on a landscape. All of that's been pushed aside to allow the politics to flow. What I did do in the hung parliament was introduce the water trigger, which was all about objective science being the key ingredient to making the decisions as to whether these things could go ahead or not. So you got away from this constant battle. I don't want a coal mine. You should have one. And the minister, Barnaby Joyce, the member, hasn't done his work in relation to that.
Now, one issue which didn't arise at your press conference, but I think is quite a live one out in rural Australia, is the extensive Chinese investment in big ventures in the agriculture sector. We've recently seen the takeover of Australia's largest dairy venture, which is located in Tasmania. And there's still the issue of the Kidman Empire, or most of the Kidman Empire, which is in which the Chinese are very interested. What is your attitude to this?
Well, I think it's something we've got to monitor quite well. I'm not against investment, but I think there's some issues here between investment and absolute ownership. And maybe we've got to look at some of the business models that are put in place. I'm not an expert on this, but one of the things, if I was elected, I don't pretend to be God on all these issues. It's my job as a member of Parliament would be to represent the constituency.
And what do they think?
Well, I don't know what they think at the moment. But that's something I think that needs to be determined. What do they actually think about this issue? I think most people would be comfortable with foreign investment, with some overhanging adjudication as to what it actually means in terms of the long term. I think a lot of people would be concerned if, say, the dairy industry was bought up and Chinese people came in and did the work, or American people and whatever, and the whole thing became just an occupation of land without any of the work or the economic issues coming to the community. But it's an issue that I'd refer to the community on.
You'd ask them what they thought.
Yeah.
Now, Scott Morrison's not God either, but he might be making a decision soon on a Chinese bid for Kidman's. In his shoes, what would you be doing?
Well, I don't know what documentation he's got there. I know the Kidman properties. I've been over quite a few of them. I've read all the books. Yeah, there's a lot of sort of historical context in terms of those properties. But in terms of the Foreign Investment Review Board, I don't know how much that's going to impact on their decision. The Woomera issue is obviously, they can find a reason for not doing it there, which would probably be handy in terms of the politics of it. I don't know the outcome of that.
Tony Windsor, thank you very much for talking with us today. It's going to be an absolutely fascinating campaign up there in New England, and the conversation will hope to get there and have a closer look over the next few months.
You'd be very welcome.
Thanks
very
again.
Welcome. Thank you.
And that's all from the Conversations podcast for today. Thanks to my producer, Pat Hutchins. We'll be back again soon with another interview.